Let's talk about best supporting actor. Okay, you got Bondi Curtis Hall from Justified City Primeval.
This is another
last tough one. We got two puff categories and we're done. Bondi Curtis Hall from Justified City Primeval versus Eben Moss Bacharach from The Bear.
Come on.
Fucking top.
I love Bondi, but come on.
I'm going to say that Babs Olesanmokun, I think is how you pronounce that, as Joseph Vindigan. Not to the top, but above Bondi Curtis Hall.
Okay, I didn't realize we were ranking them already, but...
Well, I'm just saying, like, this is dumb to the top, like, at the, you know, but yeah, you're right.
I mean, I want to talk about Eben at some point, so, yeah.
Yeah. Anatorv, Float? I guess you could put
her
over
Bondi. She's only got two episodes. So is the new to the top... like actually to number two, is that what you're saying?
No, I'm fine. Like, you know, when we get, I just knew that, you know, like, yeah,
yeah,
I'm not
there's no
put,
reason to put Eben below
Nick Offerman. You're starting to get
Nick
there,
Offerman
you
to
know.
The top. Yeah,
yeah. So Anna's
we
gonna leave
Lauren Ambrose in the supporting. Yeah,
we're gonna leave Anna at four for now.
Yeah, and Nick to the top.
I'm fine with putting her above Vondi, but like maybe we should do the top and both and sort them. I don't know.
Okay.
No, fuck it. I'm just going to put her above Vondi. Now Nick Offerman goes to the top.
Yeah, because that's a real
Lauren Ambrose to the top. Here's the thing. I don't know that she needs to go to the top, but I do want to say that this show is continuing to stun at pitch perfect casting of adult versions of Van was one of my favorite characters from last year, so when I heard that we're going to get to meet her adult counterpart, I was super excited, but also super skeptical, because like, well, it's got to be a hell of a person. And still kind of, there's a little mystery about her character and what she's been doing, and like, you know, what her fate is going to eventually be, but I thought they knocked it out of the park with just finding this person.
Yeah, I've liked Lauren Ambrose since Can't Hardly Wait. And I think she does a great job in this season. I'm looking forward to more of her in the show. She's kind of the replacement for, is it Nat? In my mind.
I guess, yeah. That she's probably that like plays going to play that role within the group.
I mean, maybe not the same exact role, but like she's going to bolster the group because we didn't have her in the first season. Now we don't have Nat. So like... Mm-hmm. She'll keep the group dynamics alive, which I'm excited for because she's great.
What do we do with her? Do we put her up or do we just kind of let her float there?
I could float her. There's so many good people on this list. That...
How about Kei Hui Kwan as OB Ouroboros in Loki season 2 to the top?
God damn, he's so good. So this is a thing we struggled with, I think, when we were making this list. Is he just playing Kei Hui Kwan?
No, he's definitely a like upping up the airiness, the airheadedness. Like, this isn't Data from Goonies.
You're right.
This isn't.
It's the same energy as those characters.
It has the same energy.
He has a
but
confidence in Data that he does not necessarily have here. Or
it's just it's weird. It's like a charismatic autistic person. You know, because he's like got like all these like he's very cheery and he's like everybody's his friend, but like he also just misunderstands basic human interactions, but he also gets along like gangbusters with Kang because they're simpatico.
There's like a Data, and not his Data, but the Brent Spiner Data quality to him, where he integrates new information into his personality in like a computational sort of way.
Yeah,
that is very different from his Data.
Or maybe there's something like he's blissed out, like there's a lot of stuff where he should be more depressed and morose about, but he just comes across as like happy, relentlessly happy.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, this is a dude that like moved into a hangar, invested his life savings in a Radio Shack, and left his wife because someone dropped a book on his desk. You know, like, there's mm-hmm. something, there's something a little bit off on the human relational side here. It's like, I think it's a performance. It definitely is a performance. It's way different than what he did in Everything Everywhere All at Once. Of course, he did like 17 different things.
Yeah.
It does. It definitely, if he's aping a character of his, it's definitely the laundromat owner husband version of what he was doing on Everything Everywhere.
Sure. Mixed in with the Data of Goonies as far as the like inventor side of it, right?
How do the people say Everything Everywhere All at Once? Is that like E2A2O? Because it's a mouthful to say.
Yeah.
E-E-A-A-O? E-2-A-2-O? I don't know.
Maybe E-2-A-2-O.
I know written in like an internet, it's always E-E-A-A-O, but...
Mm-hmm. All right, so he needs to go higher then.
I think so.
I like him at number 4. How about that?
I was about to say, yeah, I like him right underneath Babs.
Okay.
Ooh, Ray Stevenson got pretty high on the badass list. Now he's trying to be best supporting actor. I mean, I gotta tell you what, like, he's not in this production. This season's a full letter grade lower.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, if you say that that Ahsoka's a C-minus, like, it's in the D-minus territory without him as a really solid antagonist.
And he has an uncanny ability to deliver dialogue in a very important way.
Yes, and it's also, we haven't seen, I mean, I guess the closest you can get to his Jedi archetype is Count Dooku.
Okay, yeah.
But he's, I guess, a less sinister, more noble version of that, or maybe Dooku's just an older or crustier version of him, but like, like kind of gray Jedi. I know fucking people get their panties in a twist when you start talking about gray Jedi, but... Dark Shit. Jedi.
Light Sith.
Where do we... I put him at 3, but that's ridiculous, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's just not asked to do a ton, even though what he does is made infinitely better by his performance.
Does he go under Anna Torv? Above Anna Torv? I mean, one way to look at this is like the stats nerds do with sports, is like value above replacement player. 20 different people could have done tests on The Last of Us.
I mean,
not many people could do Ray Stevenson as Baylan and Ahsoka.
That might be true.
Because it's good. Anna Torv's good role, good material, and she knocked it out of the park, but that's not a hard role to play, I don't think.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Baylan's a hard role, too. But it's just, yeah. Like, it wasn't demanding. It was demanding of him to, like, speak gently and confidently and stare into the middle distance and talk about the dream and the failure of the Jedi Order in, like, sure, very high and mighty kind of tones, but... God damn, I wish he hadn't died so I'd know what they were going to do with him.
Right.
I don't even know how they go forward. Like, that's just such a huge piece of the puzzle that's going to always be missing unless they recast him, and then good fucking luck.
Yeah. Yeah, you need to bring in Ray Stevenson Jr., and I don't know. I see that. I agree with that argument. Like, he is the man for that role. So, yeah, let's leave him there for now.
Okay, let's talk about Ray Fiennes, as a rat catcher.
Talk
from
about
the rat catcher.
Somebody who is transformative in the role. I mean, I've seen this guy play the debonair ladies' man.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen him play the psychotic high-end chef. And I've seen him play just...
He was the arch Nazi in Schindler's List too, wasn't he?
I believe so. And then I've seen him play this mud wallowing hideous beast of a man in the Ratcatcher. He's magnetic in whatever he's in. Yeah. I mean, this is an amazing performance, I think.
And you never even got to see him as Lord Voldemort, I don't think.
I did not, no.
How do you like Ralph Fiennes with no nose?
I was going to say, no didn't, hair? Didn't they make him look really weird in
yeah,
that?
Yeah, he looks kind of like a snake guy, like a snake. It's recognizably him. And yeah, he also just like chews the scenery as like, it's a lot of fun. Like,
yeah, Jim.
Boy who lived, come to die. It's got so many good memes.
Yeah, this is also a lot of fun, this role, but I think...
Yes, it's very funny.
There's something real about this character too, right? Like it's a total caricature. It's over the top,
uh-huh.
But it's also somehow grounded by his performance. I feel like this is a man who has found his calling in life, but no one appreciates it except in this one moment. And he's just overjoyed by it, but he's still
overplays his hand too. Yeah. It is interesting, and there's something sinister about the way that the tail roll. I mean, if you don't know what we're talking about, the Netflix out of nowhere, kind of. I didn't see it widely reported, but they did this. Had Wes Anderson do four takes on
Roald Dahl's
short stories, and had Benedict Cumberbatch and. God,
Orlando
who all was in
Bloom?
That?
No, it's not Orlando Bloom.
No, it wasn't.
Bloom,
but it's the
guy
who looks like Orlando Bloom. Is the dude from that Homeland?
Yeah,
with Damien, what's his face, and Claire Danes. He was like the CIA station chief or something. It's great. He's great in it. I would put him above Lauren Ambrose, Bondi Hall, Anna Torv, and he's kind of starting to run out of steam there for me. Although, why are we so precious about Kaye?
Because that performance is just so enjoyable, I think.
Is it more enjoyable than... I guess he does it for a whole season versus like a 15-minute short...
Sure.
Maybe you can, you know.
I mean, screen time might be similar, though. maybe not.
Okay, boy. Maybe I don't know what to do with this other than talk about it. I am still so salty about Winning Time. This is like the third or fourth time I've got to bitch about how I'm robbed of certain people's performances. But this guy who plays Larry Bird as kind of like a serial killer, I don't know, it's just a great take, and I really wanted to see the Magic Bird rivalry and how that changes and matures over the years and the back and forth and all that stuff. And I don't know what happened. I don't know. I guess HBO is just cutting corners and slashing budgets and stuff. They could recoup a lot of money by axing that show, but man, I wish they'd left it open-ended rather than just, you know, doing that kind of like late mid to early 80s comedy ending where you just kind of like show Larry Bird went on to win 3 MVPs and blah blah blah, and you know, Dr. Jerry Buss went on to blah 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 before he died. It's so beyond abrupt and shocking. But he was great. He was great. I wish I could recommend you guys to watch this fucking show, but it's kind of like season one of 1899 or whatever. They fucked it. It's sunk cost. But he's great. He's great. It single-handedly inspired me to watch like 7 or 8 hours worth of documentaries about Magic Johnson and Larry Bird and the Showtime era Lakers.
How great is he? I mean, taking
he's
the
great enough
the
for me to
it.
Take him above Vondi Curtis Hall, which puts him into the top 10. But like without you seeing it, I have a hard time. And he did kind of lead an entire episode by himself, like where you go to get to know Larry Bird and his dad and his mom and then French Lick and, you know, him almost giving up on basketball because he's such a fucking misanthrope. And Good stuff.
I'm looking down this list. I'm a little worried.
What are you worried about?
I think the saving grace is going to be Carl Pena, but is looking like a sausage fest at the top of this supporting actor. For as much as
really
lead actors were leaning female, this is leaning pretty heavy male.
Oh yeah, but I'm genital we'll blind. I don't even see. I don't even see. It's all right. Everybody's just Barbies and Kins to me, man.
Do you see Ben Daniels? Because I see Ben Daniels. Holy shit.
Wow. Flashbacks to badass category. I mean, yeah. Like I said, he just did so much stuff. Like, uh-huh. He had scenes of touching tenderness with his husband. And as was pointed out to us, like, this is the second role that these men played as spouses. And they had like mm-hmm. this like natural going kind of easy chemistry and light for each other, and that really came through in a performance. And like, what a gift that you just get that for free. It's like Ben Daniels, hey, you should hire the guy that I, you know, played 250 nights in the West End as my husband. And everybody said, yeah, sure, that sounds great.
He played fearful of the Emperor. He played spiteful of the Emperor.
And fearful what he could do to not just him, not just his husband, but to mm-hmm. the Empire. Like, he felt burnt, you know, he played that like, you know, you like a heavier weight on his brow than the Day, who actually wears the crown, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because Day just fundamentally doesn't take it very seriously.
He doesn't care. He'll blink his eyes and people will die, but...
Yeah,
Bell feels the weight of that,
and that's the way it should happen, because he's essentially God, and you know, he can't be wrong. Whereas Bell knows he could fuck up, and it would be bad, and billions might die.
And I mean, the physicality he brings to this role
ferocious.
Is also incredible. Yeah,
talked a lot about a ferocity, but you know, again, that fight, that mano a mano fight he does with Day, super great.
Yeah, man, he's way up on this list for me.
Okay, tell me where you think it should stop. I'm going past Lauren Ambrose, going past Bonnie Hill, past Sean Patrick Small, past Anna Torv, past Ray Fiennes, past Ray Stevenson, past Kay Wee Kwan, past Babs.
Keep going. Yep, right there.
Past Abin Boss Bacharach. Oh,
no,
right
number three.
Okay.
That's how I feel about it. We're really going to have to debate these top spots, because there's just a murderous row of supporting actors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because here we are with Dimitri Leonidas as Hober Mallow.
Endlessly charismatic.
Foundation doesn't have a lot of cool characters, and this guy was cool.
He's Han Solo. I mean, he's
very,
an archetype, but like, he just embodies it. He's perfect.
Hard conceptual sci-fi's Han Solo. Yeah, swagger, swashbuckling, totally. Scoundrel.
Uh-huh.
Liar thief. He's real great and just charming as the day is long. Let's put him above Lauren Ambrose, Vondie Curtis Hall, Sean Patrick Small, Anna Torv, Ray Fiennes. What are we doing? Are we gonna put him over Ray Stevenson? I'm starting thinking he's having a hard time getting over Ray.
He has a hard time getting over Fiennes.
Kinda.
It's pretty one note what he's doing.
So I put him, you're right. He's got a little bit of depth there at the end with Brother Constance and you know, sitting there watching the end of the universe of Bell, but
if he then goes on to play somebody like the Ratcatcher, I will be more impressed. But for all, because I don't know him from anything else, so I don't know what his range actually is. This could just I don't know, where they hire the guy they need.
He's definitely on my radar now. Let's talk about Coral Pena, who plays Aleta.
Oh, God. I love Aleta.
Gonzalez from All Mankind. And everything we said about Margot and Rin Schmidt in the previous acting category goes for her.
Except the age thing. She hasn't really had to portray an age yet. But
she's essentially just, she doesn't have any additional physicality she has to bring to role other than herself, really. She's not
there
acting
is a maturity.
Through makeup. She's not got a hunched back or
she's not
limping.
She's not wearing knee high stockings, or hip high stockings. I don't know. But she's definitely bringing like an emotional maturity to the role that she didn't have in previous seasons, which I appreciated.
Yeah, I think about her speech in, was it Moscow or St. Petersburg, to Margot when she unveiled herself.
Yes.
I thought it was really good them debating the fate of the asteroid.
And just the way she interacts with people, I think, is getting much more mature. And a lot of that comes down to the writing. I don't want to give her all the credit for that, but I'm extremely impressed by the stuff that she's doing with Margo in this season and how she's grown over the seasons. And I mean, she has another pretty big scene with Bill.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I mean, I've looked forward to her and Bill's annual meeting. And
yeah,
you know, assuming For All Mankind doesn't just completely go off the rails, I'm really looking forward to seeing her kind of like being the top woman in the American space program.
We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
This Tuesday, we're back off the clock with a new premium podcast covering our experiences with the new Amazon series Fallout, Alex Garland's Civil War, as well as some thoughts on X-Men 97.
Then on Friday, The Old Reliable, Lunch with Jim and Aaron. Join us in the Munch crowd to watch us record live at 1 p.m. Eastern, or check out the podcast later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds. And now, back with more Bald Move. Man, does she crack the top five? For me, she gets real close, if not.
How can you not put her over Kaehui?
Right, that's where I'm looking
like
at.
That's
going,
like
ah,
most of that, like, and again, this sucks for the comedy,
right.
stuff. But like, you know, you're talking about one dimensional. That's what Kaehui Khan's doing. It's very funny, and it never wore out its welcome. Like, that's the thing I kept on expecting it to, but because he's just that fucking likable. But it's not nearly. So
yeah, and the way he bounces off other characters helps that too. But yeah, maybe five.
I think she easily vaunts over that. I think over. Yeah, I put her over.
I think she has to stop at four, though.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, like, you're into some serious fucking shit. Like, the guys brought the thunder this year.
We're the top three are three number one actors, in my opinion.
Yeah,
and like, we're just gonna have to say Shades of Grey, which is better. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's gonna be a fight. Like, I don't honestly know. What about Sam Spruill?
Oh,
Ule Munk. Fargo season 5, a character that I kind of liked and then I kind of hated and then I kind of liked and then I loved.
Ultimately, this actor's performance kind of made the season not a huge stinker. Like, there's a final moment in this season that has to hit perfect, and he nails it.
We said that there's like 3 or 4 characters this season that had to be nothing less than stellar. And did John Hamm might have gotten screwed over, because I feel like I don't know how he didn't make this list. But this is one of them. This is like, if the finale doesn't work, the season doesn't work. And the finale doesn't work if Sam and Juno don't fucking show up.
Yeah.
And make biscuits.
And Wayne, we're going to be talking about David Rizdahl here in a second. Like, those three have to be pitch perfect in that final scene.
Yes.
And they are.
Yes.
They are.
Yes. So I think that he's... honestly, I'd put him over Miss Pena.
Oh, no, no, no. What?
Where are you stopping him at then? Okay.
I mean,
I'm assuming he's better
Kwan.
Than... wait a fucking second.
I mean, this is a one-note character.
He's a two-note character. That he plays a second note exactly once at the end of the season, but it's a hell of a note.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I like I said, that's it. That's it. Like, that 5 seconds, you can even like forget the whole last hour. That last 5 or 10 seconds doesn't work, and the season's like, fuck this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, but we're not disqualifying Nick Offerman because if his performance doesn't work, the season is fine, right?
That's true. I mean, there's like, there's no one lens that you can look at the bodies through probably to get to there. It's just, okay, let's just do the rise then. Better than Vondi Curtis Hall, sweetie.
Sure.
better than you're not gonna fight me on the Larry Bird thing. Anna Torv, better than Tess, better than Dmitri Leonidas. Do you want? Yeah, I mean, I guess so. You could start talking about with Ray Fiennes.
Yeah, here's where I'm like, okay, what are we talking about here?
Ray Fiennes is it like okay, what? Because the Rat Catcher is not old Ole Munk. It's not old Munch. He's not old Munch. Like, they're very similar in that kind of like a weirdo. Like, there's very difference in terms of like menace and the seriousness in which you take them. But like, I think that's a good. They're good reference points.
Sure, I can see that.
And I, you know, what's better, like a Wes Anderson kind of lighthearted romp with a touch of darkness, or a dark Noah Hawley romp with a touch of lightness? I'm not sure. You know, like 15 minutes of very tightly constructed entertainment / morality play versus an 8-hour sprawl. No, six episodes in Fargo. Whatever, but versus the sprawl of Fargo.
I mean, ultimately it comes down to who did I enjoy watching more. And for me, I think I swap Fiennes and Spruill. So Fiennes at 8, Spruill at 9. But I could, honestly, it's not all about that. It's also about the role and how good they were in it. And not just, did I like them? Did I like watching them?
Okay, what about David Riesdahl?
Oh, yeah, he's got to go higher.
But here's the thing. He's very one note. He is K Wee Kwan, right?
Even when he's electrocuted to stupidity, he's still kind of one note. He's still Wayne. Mm-hmm. He's just a little dumber.
Yeah. I think he's very. He could compare. There's another touchstone character of Ouroboros. I think they're very similar in what they're doing and energy they're bringing.
An obliviousness, a lightness, optimism.
So, boy, I. Okay, are we gonna put him above Sam Spruill? Because that seems insane.
Probably
to me.
Not. Yeah, I don't think so. That's his hard ceiling for sure. The question is, where do you put Sam Spruill? Do you drag them up?
Well, let's continue. Like I that's one I might want to fight about later. Zach McLaren, he plays big on Res Dogs.
He's not a huge
super
part of the
funny.
Show.
He was, I think he had some notable scenes in a Dear Lady episode, like he always does. Great in the old guys taking cheese camping episode.
Mm-hmm.
God, him fucking, what you call it, seducing the receptionist lady at the...
Yeah. You don't really have to seduce her, but yeah, sure.
I mean, I think, I don't know. I just got an immense amount of pleasure watching their kind of love connection be formed.
She seems down to, what do they call it?
Snag.
Smush? Snag.
Snag.
She seems down to snag pretty much
big.
Whenever.
Bring down a light horseman. I mean, I like Zach McLaren, and I need to really watch that Dark Skies, man. That's on my, Maybe like my summer weekend, stormy summer weekend list of things to watch, or maybe it'd be a good spooky season watch. But love Zach and love Big, and he needs to go up. But boy, it's also, I mean, it's a dramedy, but it definitely kind of holds it back because he's being big funny. And also, I don't think he's quite as much to do as last year. Like last year, the LSD... Mountain Dew bottle, whatever the fuck, junkyard trucker, whatever.
Yeah,
that is an all timer for him. Boy, I have a hard time putting him over Sam Spruill.
For sure.
So that puts him right at number 10 right now. Talk about Henry Winkler as Gene Cousineau. I think I really like what they did with that might be the most successful character ending for me on Barry. Like that this is just a shit human being that doesn't learn or know anything. and he finds a moral conscience because he does love Janice and he wants to find justice for her.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing is derailed by just even a little taste of superstardom.
Yeah.
And there's something really delicious and Shakespearean in that deeply serious, unserious character. And yep. I mean, also a confession, I've never seen why people think Henry Winkler is such a funny or great actor. Like the Fonz is like, that's like saying,
yeah, it's so
Steve
cheesy.
Urkel was an amazing actor, an amazing comic actor, because he does this one thing, you know, he's got this catchphrase and everybody fucking likes it. And he's on the t-shirts and the lunch boxes. Like,
and like, you know, it's like but it's like a factory made kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's not...
And I know he's great, like director and producer and writer, sure, and all that stuff, but I've never really seen, I guess, his chops. And I really got to see him in like, I see you, Henry Winkler, in, yeah, in like a Na'vi type of way.
Both dramatically and comedically, because the stuff he's doing comedically,
yes,
with Cousineau is like really strong, and it's very different,
really,
from the Fonz. He's not
really funny.
Got catchphrases and shit.
And his temptation is also played as comedy too. Like you can see,
yes,
him
the
like
way
the brief fight that the right thing to do,
yep,
puts in his mind.
Absolutely. Yeah, and none of this
goes
is
down
spoken.
For
none
he,
of
he
it
goes
is
down like the way that he goes down for literally everything, right? Like him and Fuchs.
I believe
like when all like
so.
Like Barry,
yeah,
is a hero, goes down as a hero,
which haunts,
yeah,
him. But like,
no, he's dead. Like it's
oh, does he die?
Maybe,
oh, Cousineau shoots him, right?
I think, yeah, well, Barry dies for sure. And I think Cousineau goes to jail for life.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
like he's, yeah, he turns a tragic figure.
Right.
But yeah, you know, I
that thing and it wasn't my favorite season, but like.
But I did like his, I did like what they did with,
yeah,
I like what they did with Fuchs and I love what they did with, yep, Cousineau and Henry Winkler.
Yeah,
I see you, man.
Strong performance. Does he crack?
Where's
top
our strongest
10?
Comedy role here?
I think he might just crack top 10.
I was thinking about putting him right under Ralph Fiennes, maybe a little over Ralph Fiennes.
Oh,
that's shitting on old Munch. Maybe we put him right at 10. You're right. Okay, the next
Root.
One
That's
of the yin and the yang, Stephen Root, Fuchs, Barry, season 4.
Yeah, man. I love his transformation. That's the thing that really gets me about him is he is able to embody. He's a character actor, and he's amazing
he faked
at it.
Till he was made into it. I don't know. I've never quite seen an arc like his before.
Well, yeah, and then just from a performance perspective, he seemingly effortlessly just embodies all these different characters. Like I've seen him as Milton playing this huge, just socially inept nerd.
Yeah.
And I've seen him playing this like scheming, conniving monster, who is Fuchs. And then I've seen him playing the post prison version of Fuchs, who is now just a warlord.
The Raven, yeah. It kind of reminds me of like you see him as Milton in Office Space, and you see him as like Judge Hammer in Justified. And you're like, how are these
so
guys the same,
right?
And then confident, like then it's like, yeah, how do you do this? How are you the dork in like Dodgeball and also,
mm-hmm,
you know, the Raven and Barry? It's yeah. I mean, do we really just put him right underneath Winkler, above Winkler?
I feel like he's right there with him.
Because the thing is, like, there's some fucking brawl. There's some brawlers coming up here.
And I mean, look, Henry Winkler's doing the more subtle work. Henry Winkler is doing, I think, a better job of selling a complexity to the character. Where Stephen Root is just portraying madmen,
yeah,
just in two different ways. So yeah. I might put Henry Winkler above him. Stephen Root just doesn't quite edge into the top 10. But Henry Winkler does.
Oh,
but
Fonz.
I think they're both gonna.
Fonz fights his way back.
They might both get kicked
10.
Out. I don't know.
How about Phil Dunster as Jamie Tart? Jamie Tart is a character that I pretty
season.
Much hated in season 1,
yep,
and by the end of season 3, he's up there with my faves. I love him and Roy's arc. I love him and Kaylee's arc. I love him and the team's arc. I love meeting his mom and his lovely stepdad. I loved him making Roy bike through the Netherlands to see the windmills.
Yep.
It's, made me feel good.
This is his season, man. He had the stuff with his dad last season, which was kind of a downer. This is the opposite, right? Uh-huh. This is his return.
Yeah, this is his redemption. This was his redemption.
And it's beautiful. I love it. I love seeing it.
Yeah. Wish we had a couple more seasons because they fit too little too many redemptions in this year. Like, it feels like doing Jamie and who's the equipment, Nate the Great. The fitting both of those guys' redemption arc, especially since like Nate just became like, it was still an active monster halfway through the season.
Yeah, they brought it around and I think it was okay.
I think they did. But I could have used another season of the development. They just reset Nate so hard at the end. Okay, so where are we going to put him?
Was Jamie the one who found out that his teammate was gay this year? Oh, no, it was...
No, that was the captain.
Yeah, the captain. I forget his name.
I forget all those people's names.
Me too.
I can't remember the... Yeah.
Jamie needs to go up... Obviously.
I don't think he gets in the top 10, though, does he? Like, I put him above Big, maybe? Above David Rysdahl?
Man. How are there this many great performances this year that we have a top 10 that's so stacked that one of my favorite performances can't get into it? Christ, yeah.
It's a tough one, but
I liked him more than Big for sure, but if you don't want to put him there, I don't care because it's not top 10. It's definitely not top 5.
Okay, I'll put him over Big.
Can move along.
Let's talk about...
I'd probably put him above Steven Root as well. Am I crazy?
Yeah. You can get him in the top 10. Like, I wouldn't fight you too hard if you say he's better than Henry. I don't know about that.
I appreciate the complexity of both of
he did
Gene
some
Cousineau,
Henry
Jamie
Winkler
Tart.
Did some
I know.
Really Henry Winkler did some really subtle stuff on
That's
top
what
of
I mean.
The other stuff too.
Yeah, which and is some, why this yeah, some... K. Hugh Kwan stuff and Ray Stevenson stuff, that stuff's not sitting well with me being so high up there because it's not very complex.
We can run it. We can run it.
Yeah, we can or we can leave it.
How about
not top 5?
How about I tell you Walton Goggins to the top?
Uncle Baby Billy. Oh, him singing.
I don't know if everyone
Lord
feels this way, but
payday.
I got an unreasonable amount of joy out of Uncle Baby Billy this year.
I do
like,
too.
That fucking There'll Be a Payday is a toe tapper. Him trying to like get all these little schemes and businesses and him trying to be the daddy. You're not our daddy. No, I'm the dad.
Hold on a second. Slash Boyd Crowder.
Oh.
Justified CP. Because he does get his moment to shine at the very end of that.
Does it count that way or just for the badasses? I don't know.
I don't know.
Because Juno Temple could have gotten credit for her turn as Kylie, too. But I mean, that Boy Crowder was that's a hell of a post credit sequence. We'll leave it at that.
Right?
It's the reason I would come back for another. I probably always come back for a Justified season.
Yeah, just to see.
But like,
they hit me with another stinker, and no, but
they're going back to Harlan with Boyd Crowder. Like, how the hell can that not hit?
Honestly, even if Raylan's not in it, I would come back for just Boyd.
Yeah, a Boyd Crowder spinoff.
Mm-hmm.
Harlan County Outlaw. I'm not even joking to the top. I mean, he probably wouldn't stay there, but like, Jesus Christ, he's at 20 right now.
Yeah, he doesn't deserve to be at 20. We can to the top him.
Okay.
We've been kind of debating as we go, but we should just to the top these.
Also, John Goodman, I think he's a fine actor, and he's been in a lot of my favorite stuff in my entire life. Like, first time I remember him on the Roseanne show. I thought, yeah, he's great that there. You think about all the work he's done at the Coen brothers.
Such good work.
Shit, he did, like, I just saw him in playing the heating and repair college dean on Community, and he's like, he's very funny, but he's also a very fine serious actor. And I just go back to that moment where his grandson tells him he wants to be a preacher, and like, I don't know why that can pluck my heartstrings. That's such a weird thing for me to say, that this con man flim flam TV preacher, still kind of like quiet unshakable faith in God, is moving to me. I don't know. It's a weird trick.
I mean, if you take the God out of it, at its heart, it's a son, and I know it's not his son. It's like his grandson or whatever, but it's a family member, a junior family member coming to a senior and saying, I appreciate what you've done with your life.
Yeah.
And I want to honor it in this way. And that I think is the core of it, whether he was a used car salesman or a preacher, like, it doesn't matter.
And in fact, somebody at his fucking family turning out normal. Like, that's got a few, that's part of the other component too.
That's a big issue, yeah.
Like, all of the lunatics, top to bottom, kids, grandkids, this is the one bright spot, right?
Yeah. It's the only path toward
it's Danny McBride's
a real
wife.
Legacy that he has.
Yeah, Danny McBride's wife and this, their eldest son, are the two.
Because otherwise, this guy's just a complete fuck up, right? His wife dies and his kids go off the rails, and he can't set anything right. If Gideon doesn't come to him and say, I want to be like you, then he's ruined everything.
Yeah. Although, I don't know. Like, seems like I'm very curious, because I guess they're doing a season four. I'm very curious to see, because, like, this is, to me, high risk, high reward territory.
Oh, yeah.
You got to a nice stopping point. Nobody's asking. Everybody wants more, but nobody's asking for more. You just tied it up a nice little bow. Coming back, like,
yeah, it felt like a finale.
With the family dynamic. Yeah, like, all the arcs were kind of pretty much
they had the monster truck scene where everybody comes together and is a joyful scene, just smashing
that
shit.
Family is as healed as I believe it can get.
Yep.
As healed and successful and as righteous as I think a gemstone can get. And they're playing fire. I don't know if I need to move him even. I just wanted to, you know, talk about John Goodman being a great supporting actor for a long, long time. Now here's one. Tim Baltz as Benjamin Jason B.J. Barnes, Righteous Gemstones. And this is, I mean, he had a lot of great scenes. This is the year he got baptized, right?
Uh-huh.
That baptism scene was bonkers. His fight with his wife's lover.
Uh-huh.
All-time great scene. I'll put it up with anything I've seen on Always Sunny this year, except for maybe even funnier because it's on HBO, so they can just...
Oh, right. Well, Danny DeVito took it all the way. I mean,
that's
short of
true.
Taking his pants off
I don't know that a mature or a NC-17 rating would have improved the funniness of that scene.
Nope. He did the most comedy you could do with your pants on.
So what do we do with Tim here? Because I do think I think he deserves to move up a bit.
I do too. I really appreciate. Yes, he is kind of one note, but he's such like a heart of the show that is just completely missing for most of these people.
Can we get him into the top 10? I don't think we can get him to the top 10 though, man. He's gonna have a hard time getting over Stephen Root, Phil Dunster, Henry Winkler.
I mean, he's a dead stop at Jamie Tartt. There's no way he gets above Phil Dunster.
Yeah, I was thinking about putting him maybe one step above David Reisdahl, maybe actually above Big too. But like, you know, we're in the top 15 now. What the fuck? And then now here, like, am I crazy to say Danny DeVito should also join Uncle Baby Billy at the top, and then we'll just sort it out?
I mean, I almost want to turn this into a Lifetime Achievement Award so that we can give him number one, because I am just consistently impressed with where Danny DeVito is taking his acting.
when I think of like the last 5 years of Always Sunny, I think he's been the hardest I've laughed at three out of the past five seasons.
Yeah, man.
These last 2 years, like not being able to breathe, tears streaming out of my eyes, can't open my eyes to see how funny it is because they're screwed shut from laughing so hard. Frank V. Russia was, yeah, like the shit eating, the shit eating soup bowl. And he's particularly good with Charlie Day too.
Yeah.
But this is just, it's just Frank coming out of the, it's Frank stuck in the spring. It's Frank coming out of the couch.
Honestly,
it's just him
in
the camera.
I have no idea how anyone gets through filming a scene with Danny DeVito. How do you ever commit anything he does to film? Because it's always hysterical. I would be in tears constantly around him.
Well, if you see the behind the scenes footage, it's not uncommon to see one of the guys crack one of the other guys up, and Sure. Every once in a while one of the guys will crack the other two guys up. And like Caitlin come in and she's got, you know, but like Danny's the one guy who comes in there and like no one can get through a take just because of the fucking inflection he puts on a word.
Yep.
Or the drool he has coming out of his lips, or the way he comes out of hair and makeup and costuming, like that's part of it. Just Danny DeVito. Who like, I think is like around, if you see him in real life where he's like, you know, wearing like tailored clothes and like the man looks like he's like I think the man looks like he's 57 years old, even though he's over 80. When he's like relaxed and moisturized and flourishing and in his lane,
moisturized.
What he does to his body and his face and his self image to make people laugh. I don't know how they ever got this guy on their show.
Stands out to me. What is the movie that I always think of him as? Like, oh, he's a real person. He's not this character.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He's amazing.
It's Screwed. I don't know if anybody has ever seen this movie. It's Norm Macdonald, Dave Chappelle, Danny DeVito. Oh no, it's not Screwed. Sorry. No, he's a weirdo in that movie.
Because I think he's good in Romancing the Stone.
Some 90s movie.
I think he's good. But is he a normal person?
It's a late 90s movie, maybe early 2000s. Oh, is this it? What's the worst that could happen? Yeah.
Yeah.
He plays kind of a scumball, but he plays like a rich, so he's all made up, he's all like dressed in nice clothes and suits and shit, and he is just a real ass person.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But not in this show. In this show, he is a lunatic.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like, what do they do? They're sitting down, they're writing the show, and they're like, okay, we're gonna have Danny DeVito do this ridiculous thing. They've gotta know. Well, A, that he's up for it, but B, that there's no way it's going to take 6 days to film this thing because they're just going to laugh too hard. Like that.
But the writing's super easy because you just say Frank reacts and
reacts
see
the way
he
would
comes
if
up
he
with. Yeah,
was
yeah,
playing a chess nobody, match under these circumstances.
And nobody knows that better than Danny DeVito, how Frank's going to act. So
he's incredible. Yeah. Hardest I've laughed all year, Danny DeVito.
Okay, so we got the two guy funny guys up top, Danny DeVito, Walton Goggins, currently at 1 and 2. But here's Nick Offerman to fuck him up because Bill from The Last of Us.
Dude.
It's tough because out of the finest episodes I've seen of television, you got fishes on the bear.
Mm-hmm. And you've got...
And...
whatever the name of episode 4 is. Days Gone?
What are you talking about? Days Gone? You talking about The Last of Us?
Yeah.
I'm not sure what that episode is called. Goddamn.
Looking it up.
We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause. And now, back with more Bald Move.
God damn it. Episodes?
It was a third episode, right?
No, it's not episode
long,
4.
Long, long time.
Long, long
Are
time.
Are you sure?
Yeah,
that's episode 3. Long, long time. Yeah, that's just that's like one of those their movies that you're watching in the middle of a TV series where it's just like a particularly fine standalone. It's an amazing like romance that goes places. It's like a 1 hour version of the first 15 minutes of Up, you know. These kind of unlikely people meeting and falling in love and the tenderness they have for each other and how it's cut short through tragedy. And it's just extremely humane and human throughout the whole thing. And Nick Offerman, it just crushes it. Just fucking crushes it.
Yeah. So I won't say I haven't seen Nick Offerman do something similar, because I would say his character in Devs has a similar demeanor.
Sure. Yeah,
but there's an authenticity that he is bringing to this that is unmatched. I mean, I and this is one of those things where the actual performance itself is amazing, but the material is kind of also elevating it, because I think it's A, beautiful material, and B, it's uplifting. In its tragedy, in its sadness, it's also somehow incredibly uplifting.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily, and I weight that because I like the uplifting stuff, but
mm-hmm.
I don't think the bear stuff is necessarily uplifting, at least in its most impressive moments. And in this show, its most impressive moment, or in this episode, its most impressive moment is the uplifting part for me.
Yeah, I don't think it's as uplifting on the bear, because most of the bear's energy comes from wanting these people to do better and seeing why they don't and seeing them try so very hard and try to change the patterns and be better people and yet still get caught up in the shit.
But there's something to say for that tragic side of it, too, because we have to talk about Eben Moss Bacharach and his performance.
We're going to. And I also, you can't talk about Nick Offerman's performance as Bill without talking about Murray Bartlett as Frank, because that's such a duet of a role. And, you know, like I said, I don't think Bill works without Frank crushing it like he did. And
also,
like,
not
you know,
for nothing.
You really
I don't think Nick Offerman is gay. And I imagine it's hard to portray that in a sensitive way as well.
I've thought that too when I was watching him. It's like, I don't think I'm a particularly good actor at all, but have like genuine passion, you know, like I was going to make out with Nick Offerman, like I think I'd just giggle all the time, and I know he's a giggler too.
Sure.
We just get to giggling and just nothing would get done. Nothing would get done, but like like to be able to do that, and also not just to sell that, but like the sorrow, like, you know, like, because that's the thing, it's like Bill has never, you know, has been kind of alone and isolated and in a box. And this person comes in and just kind of like gently eases his heart open, you know, shows him that someone cares about him. And
yeah. And I don't
even
think
out
Bill
for what's
is gay.
Best for
that's,
him.
That's the interesting part to me, is I don't think Bill is gay until Frank shows up. Like he just doesn't know who he is. That's the thing.
I think Linda Ronstadt stuff implies pretty heavily that he is gay.
Oh, really?
And the he was thinking about a particular boy in school about that song. But like, you know.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But yeah, you're right.
But I do think he's a virgin. Like, I don't think he's ever loved anyone. Like, that's actually the text.
Their sex scene.
They make it clear that's his first time.
Yeah, it is. And that's a remarkable scene as well. Just like.
Yeah. It's so, and it's also so goddamn romantic because of that. Are you kidding me? This closeted gay man, virgin, incel that is like in
the
zombie
to
apocalypse.
The
he finally
apocalypse
like,
to
thank
live.
God all the people are dead and I can just be alone and no one can ever bother me or make me feel. And then this guy drops into his pit.
Go back to his old pattern, right? He tries to that guy he was before. And it's just, what's the point? What's the use? Yeah. It's an amazing, beautiful episode. And Nick Offerman just gives a hell of a performance.
So for all the admiration and love I have for Walton Goggins and Danny DeVito, he is number one with the bullet right now, because Nick made me laugh and cry and my heart swell. But now let's talk about Eben Moss Bacharach as God, fuck, damn. What is his name? It's not Carmy. It's
Richie. Yeah. God,
this
damn,
guy,
man.
I borderline hated so much in the first season, and he still is hella annoying. But like, God, I'm rooting for him so hard at the end of the season.
His and arc also, where he starts to take his life seriously for a moment, is just like energizing. I want this man to succeed so much.
And I also feel like he, like, mostly it's Carmy kind of leading him to the light, where Carmy's the one who has completely lost his goddamn mind and is completely degenerated into rage and bullshit. And, like, Richie is kind of the guy that pulls him out of it, or at least doesn't allow, you know. I just can't believe this guy's such. And I've also never seen him not play anything but this kind of smarmy asshole in all the roles I've seen him play. And I've seen him play quite a few. Like this, like, really slow burn kind of, like, I don't know if it's redemption, but like, yeah, a guy who's been dealt a bad hand, a guy who has like hitched his wagon to this other family, and then one of the giant wheels in John Bernthal's character falls off, and he's like, now he's like this insecure guy, doesn't even know what his life is, and he's fighting for his position in the beef, and here comes Carmy, and he's wanting to transform into some fine diner. What the, where is that? Where is Richie with his fucking stained birth shirt fit into that world? And Carmy not giving up on him. And
well, and that's the thing too, right? You get the feeling this is his last chance. Like,
sure.
He's out dealing drugs in the back lot of this restaurant before Carmy comes in and kind of gives him a chance at living. And he makes something of it. I think he's genuinely changed.
Making,
you can see how he steps up in the restaurant when Ayo Debris' character, fuck, I can't think of these people's names. When she like falls on her face under the stress, he steps in and he gets shit done. He nails it. And then it's the fucking family shit that comes back into it. Like, it's the people around him. If you get the impression that like he might not be such a fuck up and a bad guy if he didn't have these influences in his life,
which is the like everybody on the Bear, you can also isn't his wife, isn't she Jillian Jacobs? Am I getting my? Because like she's somebody's she's somebody's wife on. Oh man, she's not anywhere in this list, so maybe I got that wrong. But I just remember, like, you can kind of chart his progress based on like his improving relationship with his wife, right? Sure. You can tell that he's like, she's can tell the difference, right?
Yeah, I mean, they somehow over the course of the season take him from the biggest fuck up in the entire place, and the reason that the Bear can't succeed, the beef. Sorry, the reason that the beef, I forget what the name of the restaurant, the name of the show are, is Richie, and they somehow make him into the guy who has his head on straightest at the end of this season. Like, when he's arguing with his cousin in that freezer, like, he's got the right of it. Carmy's being a gigantic fuck up right now.
And he's kind of Carmy, he's the power's turn. Like, he's being the Carmy to his Richie and vice versa.
And how they can do that in the course of like 10 episodes with this character that I agree, I hated this guy in season one.
Yeah.
He's a real piece of shit. And
one that Carmy needed to get away from, or he was going to destroy his shot in life. And he's going to end up just like John Bernthal died because of fucking Richie.
Episode is
Jesus.
I mean, it's not his episode necessarily, but. Yeah, you can't talk about the show without talking about that. But yeah, to me, it's that pizza episode where he goes and he trains at that fancy restaurant, and they teach him how to properly serve customers.
They teach him some fucking humility and perspective is what he got from that job.
Yep,
because like they broke him essentially in the best kind of way. Like,
yep.
Like the way the Marine Corps will take an 18-year-old scared farm kid that's never been outside to the big city and like break them down and reassembled it into, that's what that place did, which, you know, instills confidence, all kind of, but like he feels like a guy went through boot camp.
And they inspired him to be a hero. I mean, yeah, like a you know, veteran coming back, having done the right thing in war. Like, he goes out and he pleases these patrons so perfectly that it gives him self-confidence. Like, I get this. I can do this. And then he takes that back to the bear.
And he found his, like, authentic self. Like, he doesn't have to flex and be somebody else. He can just, like, there's a version of Richie that can be, like, the front man for this high-end restaurant. Yeah. He doesn't have to be something different. He just has to stop his bullshit, really. Get out of his own way.
There is no image. There is no image there. Right? Yeah. I'm not me. I'm getting this job done.
Okay, my burning question is, does he go above Nick Offerman or under Nick Offerman?
He goes under Nick Offerman, but barely. I want to stress, like, what the chasm is between Eben Moss Bacharach and Danny DeVito at number three here. Danny DeVito, amazing, don't get me wrong.
And this is an indictment of our comedy drama handling. But
it is.
Yeah, you're right.
But there's just a monster gulf there, and now we got to talk about whether Ben Daniels is going to cross that gulf. I'll just throw it out there. Yes, I think he does.
Okay. But I wouldn't be surprised if Danny DeVito ends up in the top five.
Yeah.
Because I don't know there's not that many that's going to break through that wall.
Nope.
Coral Pena might get over Baby Billy.
Again, comedy bias, right? We're biased against it.
But I'm looking at the rest of this list, not seeing it, man.
I'm feeling like I might rearrange a strong top five.
I might rearrange the six through 10.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Like, it's...
I really like Babs.
Is Ray Stevenson better than Babs? Olasan Mokun?
Not for my money. I don't think so.
Olasan Mokun. I got to practice that.
And Benga is asked to do
a lot in the future, I bet.
Right. Yeah, Babs is
Star Trek Strange New Worlds keep this guy? My God, they got a Denai Gurira situation on their hands.
True. Gonna need him on Dune Part 9.
It's a good thing he died in Dune Part 1, or they'd have a total Denai Gurira.
This is sci-fi, man. Yeah.
They're gonna clone him.
Uh-huh. Clone him from the sand he turned into.
Yep. Fuse him with a sandworm. Like I said, I don't know. I have a hard time. You can make arguments. Like, I don't know. Maybe put Babs over Walton Goggins even. Like, open up that a little bit.
The one thing that I think I want to change about this top 10.
Yeah. That's it?
I think so. I feel like Jamie Tartt, Phil Dunster is getting under.
I feel like we're all overvaluing Kay Hui Kwan too. Like, a lot of stuff we said, like, I don't understand why he's higher than Henry Winkler, Stephen Root, Phil Dunster. Like, he did one thing incredibly well, but, like, compared to some of the more rounded and, you know, comedy speaking, Shakespearean type performances that these guys are putting in, it seems like he's way too high.
I think the more we push down these comedic performances, the more of a tribute to Danny DeVito this becomes, which I'm totally okay with.
True.
Having him in the top five with a purely comedic role.
All right. Here's what I'm thinking. Bam.
Oh, boy.
So I just put that drop.
Putting Dunster in the dumpster.
Where you want to put Dunster? Because, like, I genuinely have a hard time putting him over Henry Winkler.
I do too. I just feel like they both need to go up because they're such subtle
comedy
work.
We need a comedy division because they'd all be in the top five next year under next year's rules.
I kind of want to my heart of hearts is telling me that they come in at
one thing we also I don't think we actually talked about so as you're thinking about that, I don't think we actually talked about Vondi Curtis Hall either.
We didn't really. He was very good.
He's probably my second favorite character outside of Raylan in City Primeval, and he mm-hmm. like I don't know. I just really liked the mystery of his character and discovering who he was. And you start kind of thinking he's kind of this kind of lightweight guy that's always in a shadow of this Manziel character. But then you also see that, like, man, in the right circumstances, he might have ran Detroit.
Yeah. Yeah, he's such a tragic figure.
Really, he really is.
And his resiliency kind of in the face of that tragedy, like, his life has gone to a place where he did not want it to go, and he's not letting that get to him.
There's a nobility to him, and like there's a fatherly quality that he had with the district attorney lady, and it's a great role. It's a great role. Reminds me of an older, like if Omar Little had gotten into like his late 50s, early 60s. This seems like a version of Omar. And that's high fucking praise, man.
Fondy coming from the top 10.
Yeah, what did I do with him?
He's 21 right now. I don't know where he goes.
Top 10, but he's over Phil Dunster. I'm gonna tell you that much.
What?
I'm a good writer, Sam Spruill. What do you think of that?
Look,
now you need to ask yourself what you want to do with Phil Dunster, okay?
Yeah. Because
like I said, I have a hard time getting him over where he's at. Like,
To me, Henry Winkler and Dunster need to go up. But Ray Stevenson is the thing that I think you appreciate way more than I do. I think Ray Stevenson is doing a very good job playing this character.
I might be overvaluing Ray Stevenson. If you want to accuse me of that, sure.
And it's the last time he's probably going to be up for Baldy, so I do understand you don't want to knock it down too far, but like
the man died to make Star Wars slightly less shitty for 1 year.
They should have had him in
that. That's not good
in a Rogue One role, or not Rogue One in Andor role, because like he's the class of actor that can do Andor, not Ahsoka.
I just don't know why we couldn't have him as Joris Seboth and just play the heir to the Empire out. As it did, maybe dial back as crazy a little bit, but this kind of like that'd be such a fucking baller role for him. They fucked it. They fucked Star Wars so hard, man. They completely destroyed the Skywalker saga.
Literally, Skywalker the only saga thing I'm looking forward to is Andor season two. That's it.
The Skywalker saga has that like 2.5 good movies, and then out of 9, it's just. All right, Phil Dunster, what are you gonna do?
I think the Skywalker saga has 4 good movies, but that's just me.
Really?
I like Force Awakens and I like all of the original trilogy. Say what you want about Ewoks.
Okay.
I love Return of the Jedi. I don't care.
I really liked Force Awakens and I've seen it like 4 or 5 times. I've not seen it since I saw Rise of Skywalker. I
can understand why.
I can't imagine sitting down and watching The Force Awakens. It's like I'll never go back and watch season one of Winning Time. Like, why the fuck would I?
You know it doesn't end well.
I know people have, but I'm not super interested in starting a rewatch of Game of Thrones. Because why the fuck would I? If George had finished the books and I could just be like, oh, I'm back in the Game of Thrones mind, I'll just stop watching at season 5 or season 4 or whatever. But like, goddamn, like I'm just in a bad Andor's got me clinging on to my Star Wars fandom by a sliver. So what are we doing with Phil Dunster? Goddamn it, are you going to move him and Winkler up to?
I'm not going to argue that he could get into.
What
the
if
top
I take Henry?
Here?
And I took Dunster and I did this.
Oh my
so now
god.
Henry is 8, Phil is 9, Ray is 10. But now we push Rafe and Sam Spruill out.
That fixes it for me. That's great. That's amazing. Jamie Tartt made the top 10.
All right. Well, there you go.
And ultimately it doesn't matter because the top 5s are real noms.
True.
And it's a murderer's row up there. My God.
Yeah. Nick. So just, I guess to run it down, Nick Offerman from The Last of Us, Eben Moss Bacharach from The Bear, Ben Daniels from Foundation Season 2, Danny DeVito, Always Sunny, and Coral Pena for All Mankind season 4.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, next category is best bald moves. That's a listener category. Yeah, do we want to spoil what? I mean, do you have any feelings on that?
Best bald moves special them. Project. I have my feelings, but I want to see what the people have to say.
You'll find that out. It's not like.
Oh yeah, how you gonna wait before it? They hear this.
I was gonna say they're already done voted, man.
Yeah. My favorite still is A Very Belter Christmas. Like, as much as it was fun,
I think it's truly the best.
It's something that I felt like I really got the spirit of, because the rest is just silly comedy stuff that, I'm in the spirit of having fun and joking, but I got into the spirit of the holiday season with the Belter stuff. Like, what does it mean to be a Belter during Christmas when you don't have gravity or trees, you know?
Right. Yeah. Or all that much light. I'm
just imagining the stories of those people was fun, and then
I don't know
execution.
If it's my favorite though. Yeah, the execution, like I said, it's by far the best. It's by far the best thing that we've done. I don't know if it's my favorite, because I am very proud of the work we did on that too. But like, man, the others are like, I have a hard time. I guess I like One Man Manger a little bit better than Star Wars Holiday Special.
The thing that kills me with One Man Manger is I wish we had not made it's an amazing line, it has a rhythm to it, but the vast trash barge ass thing, I'm a little bit cringe when I see that part, because I'm like, hey, that doesn't deserve this, come on. But
I mean, the rest of it is
very good.
The holdovers, where the joke is he's just a repulsive person. So
true.
I mean, you got body shame and all that. Am I proud of every line that I do? And
he had no
say
over this.
This is true. Yeah, you're right. It's not like we had his agent tendered an offer. And
do you mind if we call you?
We just kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a different.
I cringe
era.
A little bit there, but I also. I mean, yeah, the stuff we did with the fireworks and the cocaine snorting. I mean, the crescendo of that is unmatched, I think.
God, I do wonder if we had had the money and time to execute the full vision of a Star Wars Holiday Special, because that was really shaping up to... that was going to be a hell of a vision. So I'm curious to see what the people are. I imagine a whole lot of people would be like, the fuck are you guys even talking about? But
go look it up. It's on our website.
I did put links to each project before you voted. So my biggest disappointment. We have Al and Joe covering the finale of Riverdale. We've got
Should Ra Ra Riverdale have been in the best bald move special project? Or Al and Joe as entities? Because that's kind of what we're talking about.
It's a fine line between that versus just our regular skits we did in the Walking Dead era. When I think special project, I'm thinking of something that we take like a month to plan, execute, all this. I don't think it counts, but it's in the ballpark. I mean, that did take months to plan. Yeah, I guess that's the closest thing.
There's maybe a distinction there to be made. But... yeah, in spirit, I see why it's not in there. But, okay, so biggest disappointment.
Al and Joe covering the finale of Riverdale, Winning Time season 2 being canceled, Jim didn't like Harry Potter, the creator.
I didn't hate it.
Silent Night, Justified City Primeval, Mrs. Davis, Extrapolations, For All Mankind.
I should have done it?
I got a question about that too. Fargo season 5, Reacher, Barry season 4, Schmigadoon season 2, Lucky Hank, Hello Tomorrow, Good Omens, and Ray Stevenson's Death. Holy shit, there was a lot of disappointment this year.
Yeah, maybe we should actually type that, because he was not a disappointment. The man could not disappoint.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, biggest. This is also Carl just Weathers a unique death. Category. We don't. The problem with Carl Weathers' death is Carl Weathers had a long and storied career, and you know, he's grief cargo star, but he's definitely, you know,
he wasn't gonna have any more of the Carl Weathers roles that we appreciate him for.
Yeah, there he was not going to be the linchpin in another phase of Star Wars, and that's where I'm. Yeah. You know, like I'm sad that Carl mm-hmm. Weathers died, but he's in the 70s, and again, he had a great career. I mean, I would be satisfied with Carl Weathers' life. I feel like, and
absolutely.
Ray Stevenson's. You know, like he's not super old, but he wasn't super young. But it's like felt like yeah, his like this would have been a big thing for his career. And he crushed it, and he got me kind of like he's an exciting antagonist for Star Wars, added a lot, and then he just, you know, it's done. So anyway, let's talk about this. Al and Joe covering the finale of Reverend. How is this the biggest disappointment? I what were we thinking?
I'm not sure what a few of these things are, but I feel like this is a disappointment to the audience, not to us.
Is this a joke? Like,
yeah, that, I think so.
Just making a joke out of our own reward show. Okay. All right. Well, let's leave that there.
It might have been time only there two. For the listener voting as a joke for that.
We don't do listener voting on this one.
Yeah. So honestly, I've deleted from our list. I don't know what it's about. We have to go back and listen to our first deliberations to understand that was.
Yeah, we'll get feedback telling us exactly what we forgot about 4 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Winning Time season two. I've said this a million times throughout the deliberations, but yeah, this thing, it just sucks, man. This is like one of my favorite shows.
Mm-hmm.
This is like if The Expanse was in the middle of season two, and right at the end, as you're going to a cliffhanger, they're just like, James Holden went on to merge with the fucking proto molecule.
Kamina Drummer went on to become the head of the trade union or whatever that she is.
Yeah.
Well, what? How?
Oh, man. I almost had a. I forgot that you haven't read him because I was about to do a big game of spoiler. But yeah, it's like if they just did that and it's like, ah, Jesus. There was like 15 more years of lore.
Yeah.
And 9 more books. What the hell? And that's. And like I said, you know, I kind of was a little bit like that with the Expanse, but that they had a good stopping point. It wasn't like, and they also left it open ended. They didn't do the nope, there is no more of this thing coming down. We're not going to shop it anywhere else. We're not going to. It's just done. And
all right,
I was disappointed in that. I was disappointed in the way, like I would have rather them not tacked on the 5 minutes of post-credit bullshit and just left it open. Like this is an unfinished show. This is going to be take some point. The biggest disappointment, Jim didn't like Harry Potter.
Interesting.
Normally, I don't give a fuck what you don't like, what you like, but this would be similar to like 10 years ago if I asked you to watch Game of Thrones and you're like, it kind of sucks. It's not for me. Like, not only is this already a massive franchise, but it's also going to be probably a 10 season. I don't know how that's going to go because, like, it's, you know, Harry Potter's in a weird place with its creator, and it's also, like, arguably hard to do better than the adaptation. Although I think casting and, like, look and feel and all that wise, maybe, but I don't know. It seems like there's lots of improvements you could make and certainly expansions you could make in the original series. But, like, yeah, man, if you'd have been like, yeah, I see where everybody sees in this and I'm definitely in, I'm like, you know,
I got a pitch for you.
We're missing a decade of podcast here.
Got a pitch for you.
He doesn't like wizard shit. Yes, pitch me.
A podcast called Harry Hooter. And it's a podcast where you are the expert. I am the novice who doesn't really get it, doesn't care to get it. But everybody who does care to get it can listen to what you have to say.
I don't know.
Because I just don't think I'm ever going to get the fantasy wizard shit. Like, it just doesn't do it for me. But
it doesn't sound like a fun podcast, though. Because especially since the first two seasons are going to be a big ask. Like, I'm wondering how much I'll enjoy the first two very kiddie adaptations of, like, imagine if there's a Lord of the Rings series and the first three seasons were The Hobbit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a long way to go to get to the quote unquote good stuff. And to me, yeah, the first movie that you watched, which is the third one, that's where Harry Potter gets good.
Well, if I treat it like The Walking Dead, I don't know what the tone of the show is going to be. It strikes me as it gets silly. The Harry Potter is not afraid to be very silly. So
the last movie's got hardly any silly stuff in it, but the last two movies are pretty dour affairs. But yeah, I mean,
but if that's season 7 and 8 of a show, it's like okay, by the time I get there, maybe Wizard I'll Hitler. Appreciate it.
You know, it's sure. the whole wizarding world is in Wizard Hitler's grasp. It's a bleak, wow. bleak affair.
So I don't Children, know. Soldiers, if I treated it like The Walking Dead, maybe I could have some fun with it. But
yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Who even knows? It might not even come. But that's the one thing. It's like, oh man, that could have had so many more commissioned movies. We could have had the.
I mean,
the,
we're gonna have HBO series, House of the Dragon coming out our dragon holes, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not that big a deal, but it's in the vying for biggest disappointment this year. Plus, I was just kind of hoping you like it. Yeah. The Creator. Oh boy, this is like I'll put this up with. I mean, it's not in the same neighborhood as A Cure for Wellness, but in terms of me being very excited about a movie because of its trailer mm-hmm. and because of the subject matter, and then the experience of watching it being so. It's a lot where like there was some things that I felt like it sticks in my mind that scene of the robot soldiers being killed for a joke and then mm-hmm. like dogs like pissing. I forget exactly what the deck, you know, you're trying to make me believe that these things are human and then you dehumanize yeah. them for a joke. It was jarring.
Definitely like some tonal stuff in there, and then also some believability stuff too. Like I never fully believed this super weapon. I never believed that the tanks that yes. they have couldn't just crush all opposition. Why have the tanks if you got this super weapon? Why have the super weapon if you got the tanks? They both seem mm-hmm. super weapony. But
yeah
and then ultimately I don't think it did enough with its concept to mm-mm. outweigh the kind of silliness of some other parts.
And we are like anyone else that's listening to this isn't a giant sci-fi nerd. Just go ahead and give a full letter grade off of what I would say. This is a C-, D-plus movie. And the visuals are spectacular. It really did deliver in that development, that department.
Yeah.
But...
yeah. And it has some really cool ideas too. About where humanity is going and all that kind of stuff. But I just couldn't really get into it.
Silent Night. John Woo coming back to action, American action films after like 15 years of absence.
John fucking Woo. I mean, his middle name at this point is fucking. He's the action director.
John fucking Woo is how you pronounce that. Yeah.
Right? I mean, his name to me is synonymous with stylish action. And yep. I was expecting to see greatness from the man who has not popped his head up in America, at least for so long. And it just wasn't there. It wasn't there. And not only was it not there, I felt like this movie was actively bad. It would have been one thing if the action just wasn't that good and the rest of the story was good. But the pacing of this movie mm-hmm. is atrocious. Like, seriously, terrible. One of the worst I've ever seen. And the action also did not... like support it being rated higher. So to me, this so far of anything we've talked about is easy number one. Easy. Because I was so hyped.
I thought we're gonna go through and talk about them all and then just do a real quick ranking.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, of the things we've talked about, like
kind of going off format
so far.
Yeah,
it's
up there. It's up there.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit more disappointed in winning time, but
sure.
Justified City Primeval. Boy, that's we had a high risk, high reward category that we retired for. I don't know if we're going to be retired for permanently, but this year because
smart
I don't know whether it's
things.
Because Hollywood just didn't take enough chances. Like, you know, this was the sequel year where I think there was something like out of 67 major Hollywood motion pictures released this year, like 61 were based on an existing IP. Sequels of some sort, and of the like five or six original things, four of them were historical piece. I think like The Holdovers was one of the few original things got made this year. Turned out it was one of the best things, best things of the year. But like, yeah, there just wasn't enough like people taking risks and doing things. But if the category survived, it might have been just this because. Mm-hmm. Justified had a few back half seasons. Yeah. I don't think anything was ever trash, but nope. I think season 5 in particular was kind of rough. And season six was just like exactly what I wanted out of a finale season and a finale episode of Justified.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're bringing him back and they're taking him out of Harlan and they're putting him in Detroit. And essentially everything I was worried that would go wrong went wrong.
Yeah. It's just not as compelling.
Not as fun. Yep. Not as badass. Not as like deep. And it's not just that they took the Harlan, took Raylan out of Harlan. It's also just like, this isn't a Raylan given story.
Yeah. They took the Raylan out of Raylan. I mean, they made him a dad, like a seasoned dad at this point. And he's just not taking as many risks. He's not as willing to mix it up. It's just not as fun. We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause. And now, back with more Bald Move.
Yeah, it felt like, when you go to you're looking to hang out with your college buddy that was the wild man.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're like, oh, we're going to cut loose this weekend. It turns out he's gotten married, had a couple kids, and he just goes to bed at like 8:30.
Like you're Will Ferrell in old supplements. School, and all your friends are not keeping up.
Yeah, this is the college friend. It's like chilled out, settled down, sobered up, and
right.
I don't want to see that from Raylan. I want to see Raylan being a crazy person. So, boy, Mrs. Davis, this has the Damian Lindelof pedigree, but also I don't even know how much he was involved beyond spitballing the idea. With the other showrunner who was the Little Shelton Big Bang, I forget. Tara Hernandez. I don't know, man. Nothing about this show worked. There was a couple scenes I thought were pretty funny, and mostly I thought this was cringe and bizarre, and I didn't agree with the it's so funny because like I love the kind of spirituality and theology, if there is such a thing, of The Leftovers. All this shit just did not work.
Yeah, I'm with you. I found myself appreciating its absurdity at times, and I think there are some decent performances, actually really good performances, but the material is just it's nothing. It's weird. It doesn't make any sense.
I felt like someone I felt like someone bought like one of the third tier Douglas Adams properties, like a Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective ones that's like, you know, and then but like one even a notch below that and then kind of half-hearted adapted it, and there's like some of the flashes of that, like you said, absurdist kind of humor and situations, but just not not quite there.
I bet they had a lot of fun writing and making this show. It looks like it would be a blast, but watching it was not a good experience for the most part. And the ending of it really just irked me. I think the ending of it was so absurd. And I know that's the point. It's kind of an absurdist comedy about an absurdist society that we have. But also, I was hoping for something more poignant and interesting from the guy who made Leftovers, the guy who made Watchmen. Like I really wanted something to follow up those two really good series, and this wasn't it.
Yeah, I thought Betty Gilpin is kind of like my first big introduction to her. I know liked her in Glow. But I liked her. I liked Jake McDorman as Wiley. I thought and also that Chris Diamantopoulos.
Oh yeah.
The three Silicon comic Valley. Guy from Silicon Valley as JQ, like I thought he is in particular was some of the big laughs of the season.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a big miss for me, man. Big disappointment. This is not quite as bad as the Romanoffs, but it's kind of in that where like I was so excited. Just like Damon Lindelof saying something about social media and AI and God, fucking sign me up. And then woof, woof, Peacock looking beat. Extrapolations.
I don't know what South Park guys should have done it means next to this, but this was disappointing.
My idea there is like you need like a former skeptic that's converted, and the South Park guys famously with their Man Big Bear, Man Bear Pig episode essentially said to Al Gore during the Inconvenient Truth era, you fucking idiot, dipshit, hypocrite, worrying about global warming, get the fuck out of here. And then like 20 years later, they did an episode where they essentially apologized to Al Gore for not taking global warming seriously. Gotcha. And I feel like we desperately need to find a way to preach outside of the choir, maybe turn around. And I don't know how to do that because
fires and floods and shit.
The crowd is violently separated from the choir at this point. I don't know what you did. And like, I don't want like the doomsday glacier to melt before we haven't figured out a way, but like this fucking self-satisfied, smug, kind of anti-scientific look at what I don't know, man. Like
the people who need to be moved by
fucking
this
whale shit,
they're not going to be like moved by talking to whales. They're not. They don't give a shit about
absolutely
the whales.
Absolutely not. That whale shit like came from a different, dumber project. Like that did feel like the South Park guys did it. This show is just because every time I see a show like this, and like what was the Don't Look Up, or I forget. Like, every time I see a project where they're trying to do something to bring attention and awareness to something, and they make it the situation even worse. It's just frustrating, you know. Like $100 million went into making this thing, and nobody watched it, and nobody's mind was changed. And what the hell are we making art for, you know?
Yeah. And as somebody who, you know, has already bought into the ideas that it's preaching about, I found it vaguely interesting from time to time, but nothing that was even moving my needle really. So
that's the thing. It's like, I kind of like I view this like a Michael Moore documentary. Like if I'm on your side and I'm kind of annoyed by your project, then what the fuck?
I kind of do like, the David Diggs, is that his name, character?
And that, the rabbi who's trying to save a synagogue from flooding and
going underwater.
And I stuck with that a couple more episodes than you because it.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, there was like this, and I thought it might have turned a corner, and maybe it was worth watching because they did this thing where essentially like a semi-terrorist act. They unleashed the stuff in the atmosphere. It was going to like, you know, try to like blot out a bit of the sun. They were doing like an extreme social and like ecological. And I'm like, oh, this is kind of interesting. I'd like to see where this goes. But like, no, like, and also if you're waiting till episode 5 to hook me, this fish has already gone away, man. I stole the worm right off your hook.
What do they call that? It's not terraforming. It's like something engineering,
Terra
climate engineering.
Maybe. Why would it be called terraforming?
That's what it is. I mean,
because it's like it's making
we're already terraformed.
We're trying to return it back to the original settings. You know, factory.
Guess that is
we need to factory reset this bitch.
Yeah, we do. We do. But you got to flip over the whole Earth and hit the button on the bottom.
Yeah,
it's really hard.
Oh my God, you got to plug it, unplug it for 15 minutes. That's a problem.
Everybody dies.
Earth can't
be
off for 15 minutes. No. Fargo season 5. What the fuck?
Oh, wait, we skipped For All Mankind season 4.
Oh, sorry, For All Mankind. Okay, yeah. So For All Mankind was still a good show that I enjoyed watching. It's just I've got this horror that the cracks I originally started see forming in season 3 are, even though we've plugged the worst of them in the bad Danny plot, they're just getting wider. Like the basics, the nuts and bolts, dude, the science, the disasters and the survival and the big geopolitical economic, like I just feels like it's getting out of their away from them.
Yeah, I think For All Mankind lost its goddamn mind with the Lee plot this season and the Miles stuff. Like it did not, like, I understand what they were trying to do. It's just that they didn't do it effectively. None of it worked.
And
where,
like, in typical, like, late season for All Mankind way, it didn't really matter because they had the pieces there to do. But, like, even then, this is the shakiest finale that the show, and that's the thing that they usually fucking nail.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still eager to see what the, you know, this next year might be it. Like, if I don't see a return to form or at least a slowing of the dumbing of the show, I don't, I mean, because the other thing is like they're the cast of characters I care about is rapidly dwindling too. So
yeah, I mean there are other things we can cover that I can take more care, I guess, with their property. So
yeah, For All Mankind needs to watch itself. Why is Fargo season 5 on here?
Well, because it was everything about it was disappointing up until like the very, 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 very end.
Did we put this on before but like we saw the finale, or is this just a conversation we wanted to have?
Probably a conversation. Ultimately, I don't think it was. I mean, it's like a. To me, part of the experience is the journey, right? And I was disappointed by the journey. I never settled into this show and felt good about the show. It's just that at the end, I finally understood what they were doing. It just wasn't worth the trip.
Yeah, and if I'm being honest, only about half of that finale really worked for me. I didn't really like the rate the Roy Tillman stuff. Obviously, I like the old bunch and the Dot breakfast detente, yeah. But the season was a slow start. I think the season was kind of like falsely advertised, I should say. You know, they like lured me in with a false promise of like this breezy, you know, Raising Arizona / Big Lebowski / Home Alone season of, and it just wasn't that. It's a pretty dour fare all around. So
yeah, it was not.
I would like Fargo to be funny again.
That'd be nice. It's funny.
It had some laughs, but you know, I said this is supposed to be a funny season. Everybody told me this is a funny season. Reacher season 2. Reacher season 2 needs to be better if it wants me to keep watching it. Like, it needs to be, like, I'll watch silly action. Like, I like Banshee. I like stuff like that. I thought the first season was not quite as good as Banshee, but also Banshee didn't quite have an Alan Richardson. I don't know, man. It's hard to talk about it with just myself, but
yeah, I haven't seen it.
The characters are just a little bit weaker. The situations are just a little bit weaker. The plots were just a little less clever. I just need Reacher to be a little bit better if I'm going to be engaged with it. Beyond the spectacle of watching this monster just rip people in half. Barry season 4.
Man. Show went on a season too long. I think we've talked about this, and I don't remember my exact problems with it because it's been a long time, but I really strongly dislike the time jump where Barry has this kid now and he's trying to, like, just spending a whole episode on that just didn't do it for me.
And then yet it seems like the show was kind of clearing its throat and stalling for time until it got to the time jump. Like there wasn't enough
that
stuff
too.
There because they had like, I agree. I think they should have gotten all this done in last season. When I still care.
Things I like about this season. So it's probably not like the ultimate disappointment, but yeah, it just, I don't know why we needed so much of Barry. Barry should have... Barry could have gone out on a really high note last year. Not with its finale that it did, but with a finale that finalizes everything, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I guess he didn't want to. I mean, shit, it could have gone out. Didn't he get arrested at the end of last season? Or was that the midway before the jump this season?
He
was trying to sneak into the house
season.
And they caught him, and then.
But didn't Cosano let him off the hook for some reason?
I can't quite remember when that stuff happened.
Yeah, he was afraid that it's like, yeah. That's the thing, is like, also, goddamn, it's taking too long to get these movies out or these series out.
Yeah.
It's very hard to sustain. And I know for me, for a person who like watches these shows 2 or 3 times, take notes on them, it's very hard for me to sustain like the plots and characters when it takes 2.5 years to get out. Like, there's some shows I will take the effort, like Severance, where I'll go back and rewatch it and probably certainly do a podcast leading up to season 2. But man, I know the strike didn't help anything either, but it just sucks when it takes like 2+ years to get something out, and especially something with like a comedy, which I don't inherently take it as serious anyway. So
Yep, and stuff we're just watching for OTC or whatever.
It's one of the best shows I've ever seen for the first two seasons. Really fell off in the back half. Schmigadoon season two, eh. It's barely an entertaining concept for the first season. Okay. This was just, I think, a real weird mishmash of tones because they were... They're throwing in essentially Sweeney Todd. What was this year? This was like Les Mis. No, this was like Chicago. What's the other? Cabaret with Sweeney Todd and Hair. And that's just, those are things that just don't really go together.
Sweeney Todd? Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And all those aesthetics and mashups and things like that. And oh, with a little bit of Jesus Christ Superstar, because that was the, they kind of had the Hair thing as a cult. And it just didn't really come together. It's cute. It's fun. And the problem is, like, as for a show that's a musical spoof, you got to have good fucking music. And this has always struggled with, right, like, you know, like, yeah, like the Book of Mormon is funny as fuck and very satirical, but it also has some jams, man. Those are some well-constructed songs. And Schmigadoon just struggles with that. Tell me about Lucky Hank and why it's on the list, Jim, because I'm ignorant.
It just, man, Lucky Hank. So I really wanted something that I guess was going to impress me from Bob Odenkirk in this, and maybe he'll get there, but in episode one, I wasn't finding it. I don't think it, ultimately what it comes down to is I don't think the comedy in it was very good. I think it was a middle of the road to like kind of less than that comedy. And I wasn't 100% sold on, I want a drama from this. So if you don't have both of those parts propping it up, it wasn't going to do it for me. And they kind of missed on the comedy.
What about Hello Tomorrow? I can barely remember this show.
Oh, this is
about
the one
timeshare
where
condos on the moon, right?
Yeah, it had this retro vibe to it where everything was like retro futuristic. So you'd have, you know, the invention of the future is, but that thing was actually like supposed to be real in that you could go live on the moon. And this guy was selling Crudup. Billy Crudup was selling timeshares essentially on the moon, or plots of land or whatever it was. And then he had this whole thing. I think the drama of it was kind of interesting, but I was sold on something that was going to be a way more fun, but based on the trailers, and way more interesting with its imagination, I guess, of what a retro futuristic kind of society could look like. And it didn't really deliver on those fronts.
This is another Apple TV show, right?
Yeah.
Did they renew that, or did they just let that die, or was it just like a miniseries from the jump? Because I never, that's the thing, is like that thing came and gone and went.
Yeah. So, series premiered, episodes. As far as I can tell, there's no.
When did that show premiere?
February 17th, 2023.
When?
February 17th, 2023.
Okay, so it was very almost a year ago. Okay.
Nothing I see says that they have begun talking about a new season, and it got like a 54% on Rotten Tomatoes, so
yeah, just kind of
mediocre. It was. I thought there was something compelling with the drama with this guy and his son, but it wasn't. His son who didn't know he was his son, but he was a salesman. It was kind of interesting, but eh.
Let's talk about Good Omens season two. So this was a Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman collaboration, right?
Yeah, of course.
And I feel like I read multiple things about Neil Gaiman being kind of like leery about doing, you know, future work on this stuff without having his writing partner. And they had some notes and some ideas, and man, they should have just stuck with the one and done, because this was a very unfun episode. The first season was so funny, so subversive, so getting to know like the relationship of the demon and the angel, and their, you know, the commonalities they have with each other, and their kind of like struggle against heaven and hell. I thought that stuff was just so good. and it just all fell flat. And it had a central mystery with John Hamm, who I didn't care about, and he seemed very bored. And
they tried to replicate the whimsical feel of that first season, and it came across as just like forced and cheesy. Nothing worked. They had
a story in season one, you know, the Antichrist is born, and then Armageddon's coming, and you gotta stop that, or they're gonna have to go back to their old lives, and they don't like their old lives. They want to stay on Earth forever and ever, don't we all? And what the hell is the even story?
Story's
here?
The same here. They don't want
to. I didn't finish it. That's the thing. It's like I stopped with like two episodes left to go, but I'm like, Gabriel thing just wasn't going anywhere.
Nowhere. It's the biggest disservice I've ever seen anybody do, John Hamm. He was asked to play one note for 9 hours or whatever it was, and that's all he got to do until
he's playing an angel episode with dementia, and it's just
an angel who's forgotten who he is, and he's been told, and he's real dumb, so he's gullible. He just believes everything he's told, and that's the note, and play it over and over and over and over again. I hated that. I hated that role. I don't feel like there was any urgency to this season. The story is basically like Gabriel loses his memory, comes down to Earth, and Aziraphel and whatever his name is hide him in the shop because they care about Gabriel, I guess, but they know if he's found out, they're going to hell or whatever, or they're at least going to be taken from Earth. So they hide him all season. It's just, yeah. And then you got the coffee shop owner next door who, like, there's a woman, she goes and, like, shops in the record store where this other woman works. I forget exactly what it is, but, like,
there's a romance there of some sort.
Yeah, it was a romance, and it was like, okay, this is all right, but it all feels unnecessary. And that's the biggest sin of season two of Good Omens. It all feels unnecessary.
Then finally we have Ray Stevenson's death, which I think is self-explanatory. Not only is a tragedy that we had this badass who didn't get to achieve the body work he probably deserved, but in particular, he was a great new original Star Wars antagonist, which it's been a long time since we've seen a compelling one. Like, you got to go back to what, Darth fucking Maul?
To get a Jedi antagonist,
to get somebody that was fucking move the pulse of the fandom. The cartoons don't fucking exist. They probably, Cade Bane, whatever. But he was a great character, and it's something that Disney was doing right, and he's taken from us too soon. So now that we've got them all laid out here, let's rank them. Was Jim not liking Harry Potter more or less a disappointment to me than Winning Time getting canceled? If I take the monetary thing, if I just judge it as entertainment, if I don't, see visions of future coverage of getting 100,000 people listening a week for years and years and years out of the picture, I can't. No, I don't think so.
Harry Hooter.
Like,
I'm telling you,
I fully expected you not to like Harry Potter, actually.
Yeah. I mean, the person who commissioned it probably fully expected me not to like it.
I thought Azkaban is the, and I still do believe it is the by far best shot to get you to like it, and is a great entry point to the series, but
I'll say I respect what that movie did. It was way more of a complex narrative than I expected.
Yeah.
When the turn comes, I thought it was cool. It's just, I can't get into wizard shit.
Yeah.
So more or less, I don't know.
And it's a great looking movie too, with Cuarón directing it, and arguably set the tone from Chris Columbus to the future mature Harry Potter. So we gave it the gold college try. It just didn't work. To me, the creator's not nearly as disappointing as either of those two things. I don't know. Maybe it's more disappointing than you not liking Harry Potter. It was certainly a bigger surprise.
I mean, we're going to get more shots at grand sci-fi. We're already getting, we're in the middle of getting all those shots. So I don't think that the creator can be like, if this was like the last gasp of sci-fi and if we were pinning our hopes on it, it'd be a huge disappointment. But sci-fi is just ramping up, man.
What do you think about Silent Night?
Like I said, this has to go to the top for me. I was expecting greatness from John Woo because I've seen greatness from John Woo, and I got dog shit. Nah, I didn't even just get like not good stuff. I got actively awful stuff.
Yeah, especially since I was, you know, I'm kind of high on Joel Kinnaman right now. I would like to see him do things. And I thought this would be a great opportunity for him if he knocked out of the park. Also, I was like, you know, Violent Night was so much fun last year. It's fun watching on Christmas Eve this year. And I'm like, man, it'd be so cool if we could add some hyper-violent Christmas entertainment now that my son's almost grown. We can get a rotation of Die Hard and Violent Night and Silent Night, and maybe they'll keep making these kind of slick action. And, oh, I don't know.
I just
maybe they'll do it.
You remember the carousel scene from Face Off?
Yeah.
This movie has like 9 carousel scenes in it.
Yeah.
And they're all exactly identical. They don't have 9 separate carousel scenes, just... they show the carousel scene 9 times.
Yeah.
What the fuck, man?
I think Justified City Primal Evil could easily go to the top.
Yeah, I mean, we Raylan were just
Givens
so hyped.
Coming back. And as big a mistake this is in retrospect, getting Raylan out of Harlan is an inherently interesting concept, seeing him be like a fish out of water in an unfamiliar environment. I think that was cool.
It seems to be a mistake at this point, if I had to... because all the Miami episodes were the worst of Justified, right? Nobody liked those. Now we got Detroit. We got a whole season of that. Nobody likes that. So just go back to Harlan.
It's my Harlan, man. The creator... or no, Miss Davis. I could see that going to the top, too.
Yeah.
With just how much we have enjoyed Lindelof's work.
Mm-hmm.
Extrapolations, I don't know. For All Mankind,
it's not enough of a disappointment to go to the top for me.
You talking about For All Mankind?
Yeah.
Fargo, same, I don't even know what the fuck Fargo's
same with
doing
that.
Here. Reacher is somewhere between Winning Time getting canceled and Jim, because like, you know, they can course correct. It wasn't a terrible season. It just wasn't. It's going in the wrong direction. You don't want to see a sophomore season show take a step back. Barry season 4.
Yeah.
This might go... it's around Silent Night. Is it below Silent Night or above Silent Night?
To me, it's below Silent Night. Silent Night is going to be high up there just because John Woo hadn't done anything in so long.
Yeah, and I was kind of little out on Barry last year. So, like, when Barry came out, oh, shit, Barry's out, I better watch it. It wasn't like, you know, when the first 3 seasons came out of Barry, I'm like, holy fuck, Barry's coming back. Appointment television, I'm going to watch this shit week out, and it just wasn't that way. So it'd be a bigger disappointment, except for I'd already checked out just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Schmigadoon, I don't know. Like, it's... whatever. What about Lucky Hank?
Yeah, it's whatever. It's a brand new show. Who cares?
Same with Hello Tomorrow.
Nah.
What about... I'm going to throw Good Omens and Ray Stevens to the top.
Yeah.
And then I think we've got a top 10 we can fight about.
Yep.
Okay. Is it more disappointing that Good Omens sucked or that Ray Stevens' tragic death put an end to Balin's score?
I wish Ray Stevenson was in a better show. Because Ray Stevenson couldn't have saved this show for me, even if he lived, right? It's not like I'm going to follow Ahsoka across the universe to see Ray Stevenson be Darth Dickbag. I just don't care about the rest of it. So if he was in a better show and he died, if this was firing on all cylinders, I'd be like, yeah, that's a huge disappointment. But like, it's a show I didn't care to watch much more of anyway.
I'm trying to think. There's not a single show that I could put him on that would improve it. Like, Andor's a better show, but I like Andor because it doesn't have Jedi in it.
Right, right.
And, The Mandalorian is not a better show than Ahsoka. Or if it is, it's by accident.
If Good Omens has a really good second season, I'm interested in a third, right? Like,
right. Yeah.
So I'd say no, but just barely.
Is Ray Stevenson's death more disappointing than Mrs. Davis?
No. To me, this goes to number one so far because I...
Oh, number one. All the way to number one.
Yeah, I mean, Damon Lindelof has the potential to be one of my favorite creators of all time. It's, but this is not how he gets there.
Yeah. How do you see him now? That, because like he's essentially lost Leftovers, Watchmen, Miss Davis.
I see him as a guy who takes huge swings. Huge swings. Yeah. He does not give a fuck. He will make exactly the show he wants to make. And if you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't.
Yeah, because maybe I even overvalued The Leftovers because, like, I don't know that that's universally seen as everyone's favorite TV show, you know?
No, but the people who did watch it, it's very well regarded, right? I just don't think it got out there and interested enough people to really say whether the general population would have liked it. It was like TV critics. It was a darling among TV critics.
What is that that says about the album is like the Velvet Underground that, like, only 1,000 people bought that record, but everyone that did started a band.
Right, like, right.
Only,
yeah.
Only a million people watched The Leftovers, but everyone that did started a podcast on it.
It's almost true. Yeah, I think at literally at one point, 90% of the people or 50% of the audience that was watching the show was listening to the podcast.
Do you think that... Where were we at?
And I would just hate for Mrs. Davis to kill his career because I think he has a lot more cool stuff in him.
I can't. Yeah, it's not a mat. Yeah. 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 Justified City Primeval.
This is to the top for me, man.
All the way to the top?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I'm with you, actually.
Because also, I don't want Timothy Oliphant. And his career's fine. You know what? Maybe it's not number one. Because, right, his career's fine. Timothy Oliphant's going to go on
just,
and do whatever. Walton Goggins is fine.
I really hate covering shows that are just kind of a bummer.
True.
You know? Like,
very
it's
true.
Like, it's not bad. It's not... And it's like, you know, everybody kind of like... Because I'm trying to give it a fair shake in the first couple episodes and seeing the good. It's like, oh, well, you know, other than Raylan's Daughters is actually pretty good. And then it just... It just keeps going and like, oh, there's, I kind of like this and I kind of like that. And, but ultimately just can feel it not coming together. And then and it's like one of those things where it's like, geez, it makes you, it's like, it wasn't that's, yeah, it was a pretty big popularity. This is pretty, pretty good candidate for biggest disappointment.
It's way up there. Here's what I will say. If we find out 5 years from now that they were considering that the post-credit stuff was all building into a season for Boyd Crowder going back to Harlan that we never get because this season wasn't real well received, that will be a shame because I think there's a real show there. I think the charisma of Walton Goggins alone is enough to carry that. And it was magic when it was Raylan Givens.
They have to have a good heist and
yes.
It's plus also Harlan's changed a lot in 10 years. Like they'd have to address that. Like yeah, we'll see. We're back down around to Silent Night.
Silent Night. It's,
I think it's
number
more disappointing
one or number
than
two for me.
Oh wow, that what high! Do you think? I was going to throw it between Good Omens and Mrs. Davis.
Interesting. So, what's the case for Mrs. Davis? It's because Lindelof. Because it's Lindelof.
Yeah. And like, you know, like I said, John Woo has done some silly stuff and it's been a long time since he made it. And I saw the budget and I saw the, yeah, like there is a couple signs that this might not be everything that was that's advertised.
The trailer looked cool. Joel Kinnaman running circles around people in his car.
So then Barry sees, I think we might be approaching.
Yeah. How do you feel about winning time?
It's more disappointing than, cause here's the thing. It's like, this is a different case. This is not like, they're making a story about Larry Bird's rivalry with, Magic Johnson. Oh, so like, that could be good. This was like, they did that. It was good. Season two is amazing. And it just, I'm Wile E. Coyote slamming into a brick wall that had a door painted on it.
having no idea. Like, that's the other thing is, like, this wasn't like, hey, boy, HBO's probably going to pull the plug at the end. There was none of that in the, so it's like, it just was a genuine shock. Like, it was like the, I got, you've always heard about people Sopranos. Oh my God, my cable box stopped working. Like, when I saw the, like, you know, because it ends in, like, Larry Johnson, I'm sorry, Magic Johnson has just been defeated by the Celtics in the finals, and it's Magic Johnson all alone in the locker room on the floor of the shower just letting water pour over because he just can't deal with it. And I'm like, what a fucking cliffhanger for next, you know, I don't know, especially this early stage of Showtime. I don't know the history. I catch up to the history of, like, Magic and Larry Bird in another couple of years. But I'm a little fuzzy on. Mm-hmm. And then, like, from there, it starts doing the 80s comedy credits of where everybody goes and how they finish school. And it's a shock. Yeah, I think this is... I put it over Silent Night just because it was already... Like, if Silent Night had come out and had been awesome... And in Silent Night, it was supposed to be a trilogy. You heard it was going to be a trilogy or maybe a, and like, and you're all the way through Silent Night 2. And it's like the most amazing thing. And then the bad guy just blows Joel Kinnaman's brains out at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not, it's, man, it was rough.
All right.
But I don't know. Like, I also, like, I'm, you seem to be a lot more hurt about Silent Night than I am.
Yeah, I was.
So yeah, I'm trying to, maybe I should give that a little bit of, primacy.
Oh,
as long as Winning Time's in the top five and I can bitch about it on the award show, I'll be happy.
I was gonna say, you seem very hurt by Winning Time, so I don't want to.
I am.
Say you can't put it above Silent Night, but all right.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else we need to do. Like, I feel like this is a pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good, and I'm like, I might fight for Ray Stevens a little harder, but he's going to be definitely mentioned in the badass. So and we're probably going to have the in memoriam for him. So are we good with this top five of biggest disappointment?
That looks pretty good to me.
Miss Davis, Silent Night, Winning Time, Season 2, Good Omens. Yeah, and then, yeah, I kind of like even the top 10. Because, yeah, the top 10 is like the dividing line between the stuff that just did not work or was a bummer and the stuff that's like,
yeah,
had problems, but ultimately, you know, like For All Mankind doesn't belong in the top 10.
No, we'll get back to it next year, and then it might. Like, if season 5 is a stinker and we're like, well, this kills the series, then that might be disappointing, but.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I like it.
That's I think we got the baldies then sorted.
Nice.